So we are holding on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Ha'imel chaveri chatzis sadani marchalach." Person says to another, "I'm selling you a half a field." What do we consider a half a field? Meshamnin benehem. So what we do is we meshamnin between them. Now, what does meshamnin mean? The Rashbam says it comes from the word shuman, which means the fat. So it means that we have to figure out something having to do with the fat of the land. What's the better quality? Half of a field. So what do we mean by a half? Do we mean a half in area? Do we mean a half in value? So, well, that's what we have to figure out. So the Rashbam says the word meshamnin comes from the word shuman, which means the fat. So therefore it means we have to evaluate what's the fat part of the field and figure accordingly, as we'll see in the Gemara exactly what we do. Many other Rishonim say that meshamnin is actually just meloshin shuma. It's meloshin, you make an evaluation of the value of the property.
Based on what?
As opposed to that, either meshamnin comes from the word shuman or it comes from the word shuma.
Which
shuma means an evaluation. Shuman means fat. Yeah.
And fat.
So we'll see as we go through what the various possibilities are. V'noto chatzis adeu, and that's it. He gets half the field. Again, what we mean exactly by he gets half, we're going to talk about in the Gemara. What if he says, chetzi b'dorim ani marchalach? What if he tells you, I'm selling you the half of the field that is in the south? So again, meshamnin b'nehem, they figure out fat, or they figure out the evaluation between them. V'noto chetzi b'dorim, and he takes the half that's in the south. Now, if that's all it meant, it would be fairly obvious, and the Mishnah wouldn't have to be telling us. But we'll see in the Gemara, it's not quite what meets the eye over here. V'huma kabel olav mokam ageder. Now, he has to accept on himself that there's going to be the space for the fence, choret uven choret, and the large ditch next to the field and the smaller ditch. We'll see in the Gemara that you have... So the question is, who is the one who has to accept it? So first of all, what we're talking about is, again, there's three things. There's the space for the wall between the fields in a place where the minhag is to make walls, as we talked way back in the first parak. And then you have these ditches that are dug along the length of the field, which we'll see in the Gemara, the purpose of them is to keep wild animals out. So when we say he has to accept, meaning he has to give away the land for it, who is the he? The Rashbam says it means the seller. Because when he's selling a field, he has to, when he's selling a person a piece of property, and there's a half a field, he has to make sure that it's completely usable as a field. In that case, that means that he has to give away some of his own land to have room to, in other words, besides the half that we said before, that he'll also have to set aside some of his field enough to be able to make this wall and the choritz and the ben choritz. The Rambam learns not like that. The Rambam learns that what it means that v'hu makabal, it means the buyer. The buyer is going to have to accept that out of the part that he bought, there's going to have to be deducted the space for the wall and the choritz and the ben choritz.
Why do we say that just for our field and not for any field?
Because for a field, normally, a normal field already has these things around it. It already has a wall, if a wall is necessary. It already has a choritz. It already has a ben choritz. Here, where you're dividing a field in half, there's not going to be one in the middle.
Who
there.
Takes the extra?
So who has to set aside from their land to give that, that's the Rashbam versus the Rambam. Okay, you also have a Chazon Ish wants to explain that's not really a machlokas, he wants to say something along the lines of that the buyer is going to have, there's going to have to be the area itself is going to be part of the land that the buyer bought, but on the other hand, he's going to be buying that part cheaper because he's not going to be using it for planting, he's only going to be using it for ditches and whatnot, and therefore the seller is going to have to sell him that part at a cheaper price. So they sort of, in a certain sense, they both end up losing out, he says. But most other Mepharshim understand that the Rashbam and the Rambam are in fact arguing in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber Paskin. Yes, so the Mechaber Paskin like the Rambam, the tour says like the Rashbam and the Ramah brings him as an alternate opinion.
Brings
the tour and in turn the Rashbam as an alternate opinion. Okay. Okay. The Kamahu Chorit, how wide does this large ditch have to be? Shisha Tvachim, it has to be six Tvachim wide. But then Chorit, and the smaller ditch is Shloisha, has to be three Tvachim. And we'll see in the Gemara, there's a Tefach space between them. The Mishnah doesn't say how deep they have to be, by the way. The Ritzvah says the depth would be the same as the width. So six Tvachim deep for the large one, and three Tvachim deep for the small one. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara starts out. Amar Rav Chiya ba'Aba Amar Rav Yechanan, Lekeach Noto Kochu Shabbai. The buyer ends up getting the worst part, I can't think of the word right now, but whatever. He gets
less fertile.
There you go. Okay. He gets the less fertile part of the land. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says like this. Because, again, the seller is the one who's mukhsak right now. So therefore, now he said, I'm selling you half a field. What does that mean? In other words, it means that we don't mean half as far as area. What we mean is we figure out the entire field, let's say, is worth 100. And the entire field is, let's say, 100 is 100 acres, let's say. 100 base cap, let's say, whatever. But out of that 100, let's say, you might have that 40 of it is better quality land, and that part alone would be worth 50. The other 60 of it is there's lesser quality, and it's worth the other 50. He has to give him the value of what he's paying, which is half the value of the field, in this case 50, but he gives him 60, the 60 base cab of poor quality land rather than the 40 cab of better land, or half and half. Because he would rather do that, because after all, he would rather do that because he'd rather keep his idis, even though he's giving away more land in acreage, it's still, he's gaining, it's less fertile, so he'd rather get rid of it. But the reason is because Yad Lekeach HaLakatona, the Lekeach has the lower hand, the Mercer is the one who has the upper hand, unless otherwise specified. So the Rashbam goes on to explain that was the meaning when we said Meshamnin is Meloshin Shuman, is you figure out the fat. As he says, the idea is, in other words, what we do is we figure out how much the fatter, the more fertile part of the field is worth, how much it's worth more than the other part, and we adjust accordingly and give him the area of field accordingly. In accordance with that.
So
60% of the field is less fertile and it's worth half the value of the field, that would be the part you're given. Yeah. There's a couple of different other explanations among the Rishonim, including the Rimi Gash actually says what it means is that no, you do go according to area, but fakir, what it means is that given that he is going to end up with only 50 base calves, for example, but that 50 base calves can all be from the less fertile area, from the kachush, and therefore you'll adjust the price accordingly. We have to be talking about that we have to be talking about evidently, and there even gosh asks. I mean, the price hadn't been fixed yet. How do you have a kinyan at all? But he answers there that you're talking about they had an idea of the price, whatever. I don't remember his exact answer, but whatever. The point is he explains it that way. That's okay. What it means is he only ends up getting half the area of the field, but and the price is adjusted accordingly. Okay. So now the Priya Ba'abu recorded that statement in the name of Rabbi, but now he turns to the Rabbi and he says, doesn't the Mishnah say that Mishamnin Benehen, which sounds like it means, in other words, that we should give the Shuman equally to both of them? So we should be saying, in other words, fine, if 60 base calf of it is it is less fertile land, and 40 of it is more fertile. We should be saying each one gets 30 of the less fertile and 20 of the more fertile. Why are you doing like that? Why are you giving all the less fertile stuff to the lekeach? And by the way, again, according to the explanation that Meshamnin means that we make a shumah, that fits better, for example, with the Rimigash's explanation, because he does end up getting the kachosh. We just adjust the price accordingly. Anyway, so that's Rav Chiya Ba'abba asks Rav Yechanan. Amalei, so Rav Yechanan answers him sort of dismissively. Ad achalta kafnaisa b'bavel, while you were eating dates in Bavel, because Rav Chiya Ba'abba is originally from Bavel, and dates, we've learned before, are very common over there. While you were eating dates in Bavel, Talgimnim is Sefer. We in Eretz Yisrael were explaining the ratio of the Mishnah on the basis of the Sefer. Now, why is he using such an expression to him? Like, you were sitting there and eating dates in Bavel. Well, first of all, I mean, he's a Rebbe. Rabbi Yechon is the Rebbe. Rav Chiya Ba'abba is a Talmud. We talked before about the idea a Rebbe is entitled to speak sharply to his Talmudim when he feels they're not paying attention. But actually, this Gemara is also brought in Bechoris, because there's a similar discussion over there involving a Sopik Bechor, which one you give to the Kohen, which one you don't, or whatever. You have a similar discussion, Meshamnin Benehem, and Rav Chiya Ba'abba asks a similar thing. Tosfos explains over there. No, he uses the same expression, Adachalta Kafnaisa B'Bavel. Tosfos over there points out, Kafnaisa is not really fully ripe dates. Kafnaisa means unripe dates. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is not really telling, not like we were learning on the straightforward level that Rabbi Yochanan is telling Rabbi Abba, you were busy, you were late, you were loafing around in Babel, and we were working hard on an Eretz Yisrael. He just meant, like, you were living very uncomfortably in Babel, not even eating fully ripe dates, so like only eating the unripe ones. You should have been here with us, and you would have been in much better circumstances, and you would have been able to understand.
It means
to understand the Mishnah better.
So
therefore, it's not. He's not. In other words, he's not. In other words, the way that we would understand it on the face of it here, and the way that Rashbam says, you were loafing around, you were busy enjoying yourself in Babel, and therefore you didn't pay attention to understand the Mishnah. According to Tosfos over there, rather what he's saying is, it's a pity you were living in such uncomfortable circumstances over there that prevented you from being able to learn it properly. The Chavos Yair has yet another
explanation.
The land is very poor. The land is very poor, but like you were so poor that you had to like eat the dates before they were even ripe. And the Chavos Yair says it's very appropriate for our Gemara over here because he's saying you're looking only at the Reisha, you're not looking at the Sefer. You're doing the same thing that a person would do if they ate unripe dates. You're grabbing a hold of the Reisha of the Mishnah and trying to understand it without even waiting for the Sefer. Okay. So. What is the Sefer help? What's the Katani Sefer? Because the Mishnah continues. We say that if he said, I'm selling you the half that's in the south, Meshamnin Benehen, again, we use the same expression, Meshamnin Benehen, we figure out the fact or the evaluation between them, and he takes the half that's in the south, so you have to ask, why should he have to do any Meshamnin at all? Well, Chetzi B'Dorim, he clearly said, I'm giving you the half in the south. What is there to evaluate? You measure off half the land and give him that, and that's that.
Sounds like a better explanation than measuring.
Well, but that's according to the different explanations, what we mean. Are you giving him more land but less fertile, or are you giving him the same amount of land but charging him up?
The quotient is
constant. So the point is, Ella Ladami. So we have to say in the Sefer, when we talk about the half in the south, and we say Meshamnin Benehen, what do we mean? We don't mean that you just give him the half in the south and that's it. It means you have to figure out, again, according to the Rashbam's explanation, that you're actually figuring out how much of the field do you need in order to be worth half the value of the whole? In other words, again, what you do is you look from the least fertile to the most fertile. You start with the less fertile areas until you reach half the value of the field, and then that's the half the full value, and then that's what you give him. By the way, the Rashbam, by the way, holds that even though you said the word Badorim doesn't necessarily mean you have to give him physically in the south side of the field. It could actually be on any side of the field. Many other Rishonim disagree with the Rashbam on that, and it's not brought that way. In Shulchan Aruch, it says the fact that you said the south means it has to be measured from the south. But according to the Rashbam, at least, it means, again, all you do is, same idea, you figure out, the whole field is worth 100, so we start figuring how much of the less fertile land in it do you need to reach 50, and then that's how much you're given. So Ladami, in other words, it's only as far as value, not as far as size, and let alone direction. Hachanam Ladami, the same thing in the Reisha. Then when we say that when we say Meshamnin Benehen means the same kind of thing. We figure out where the Shuman is, and we figure out where the Shuman is, and we let the Mocha keep all of that Shuman, and only give the Kachosh, the left fertile area.
Shuman is not under the field.
So then obviously he'll give him whatever there is of Kachush, and then he'll have to give him some of the Shuman until it reaches the total amount, of course. But in other words, he's entitled to start by giving him as much Kachush as possible until he reaches that value. So that's what it means. Again, according to the Rimigash, it would mean the similar idea. Ladami would mean, in other words, that we figure out, we take half of the field in size and area, the Kachush part of it, and then we figure out how much is that part worth and adjust the price accordingly. That's how we explain Ladami, that it means we're going to adjust the price downward accordingly. Okay, so that's what it means. Okay. Then we said in the mission of a Kabbal Olav Mokam Geder, we said that he has to accept on himself to provide the place for the fence and the ditch and the smaller ditch. We talked about that the Rashbam versus the Rambam. Who is it that has to give it? Is it the Moicher according to the Rashbam, the Moicher has to provide extra land for that purpose, or according to the Rambam, the Lekeach has to give away some of his land for that purpose? Okay, Tana, We learn in a braisa, how is this arranged? Charetz mibachutz ben charetz mibifnim. The charetz, the larger dish, is on the outside, the furthest away from the field. Ben charetz mibifnim, the ben charetz, the smaller dish, is closer in, closer to the wall. Vezevezah charetz geder, both of them are behind the wall. So in other words, here's the field, or half a field now that he's buying. You're going to have the wall here, then the ben charetz, then the charetz, in that order. Between two fields. In this case, we're talking about you selling a half a field, so a new fence and a charetz and a ben charetz have to be made. If you were selling a whole field, they would be there already. So you have, again, you have a wall to separate one field from the other in places where the local minhag is to make a wall. Some of the Rishonim talk about that you may need a wall in any case to keep out animals. Some of them say that maybe not, that only you may need it for Hezek Rio or whatever, so therefore it may not be an issue if people are worried about that in that area, as we learned back in the first day. The Charetz and the Ben Charetz you need regardless, because that's to prevent animals from getting in, as we'll see in the Gemara in a minute. So they are ditches in the ground. They're ditches dug along the length of the field. We said in the Mishnah, the charetz is 6 tefachim wide, and the Ritva says also deep, also 6 tefachim deep. The ben charetz is 3, and according to the Ritva, 3 deep. And you have them in that order. You have the field, you have the wall if there's going to be one, then the ben charetz, then the charetz.
These ditches hold out animals from jumping
in. They keep animals from jumping in. Yeah, that's what we're going to say. Kadesh shalai tehe chaya kesetis. The reason why you have all that is so that wild animals don't jump onto the fence and be able to get into the field. Therefore, you need the charetz and the ben charetz. The question is, why do you need both of them? V'lo eved charetz, v'lo eved ben charetz. Why don't you just make the large ditch and not make the small ditch? The answer is, I did a ravach, kind of a gavei v'kasta. Yes, but the problem is, the charetz is wide, 6 tefachim wide. So therefore, the animal, a wild animal, could get into that ditch and then stand there or like back up a little bit in there. It has enough room to back up and jump.
Easily.
Yes, so therefore, charetz is not enough. Okay, the question is, le'evet ben charetz or le'evet charetz? Fine, why not the other way around? Then just make the ben charetz. It'll be too narrow for an animal to be able to brace itself and jump from there. The problem is, I did a cutting because since it's smaller, it's only 3 tefachim wide, kaima asfasa the cutter, fine, it'll just stand by the edge. It'll just stand by the outer edge of it and jump. It's only 3 tefachim across. It can jump across easily. Yeah. Okay, so that's what it is. So therefore you need both of them, the kama ben charetz to ben charetz, and how much space do you have to have between these two ditches? Tefach. Because the tefach is not really enough for an animal to be able to stand with any kind of stability. So therefore, so again, you have the charetz, which is 6. So even if the animal tries to stand in the charetz and take a running jump from there, it's not going to be able to get far enough. It's not going to be able to get all the way to the wall over the ben charetz and the extra tefach over there.
The
charetz
and the ben charetz jump over.
It's not going to jump that far. We're not talking
6.
No, it's 6 tefachim plus 1 plus 3. You're talking 10 tefachim altogether, and then it needs to reach the top of the wall. The average kind of animal we're talking about. We're not talking about something like a lion or whatever. Yeah, we're talking about smaller animals like weasels or things of that size. So, yeah.
And if you had one big wall that would last.
If it's not wall, but yeah, you could make the wall very tall, sure, but that would be a big hassle, and it would cost a lot in material to make that a ditch. Ditches are much cheaper to dig. Hadron Aloch Beskur. So now this perek and the next perek, we're going to be talking about an important topic in Dinim Ominous that we haven't really gotten very much into. We've talked about it sporadically, but not really in great detail, and that's the whole concept of Yerusha, the inheriting property. I haven't found anybody, by the way, who explains why we left it for so long. We had Baruch Hama, we had Baruch Matia, we had most of Baba Basra already. Why suddenly are we getting it to here? I guess one
why
reason...
Here?
Why here, Doc? I guess one reason might just be because first, you talk about all the dinim that apply to a person's own property, and then eventually what they do while during their lifetime, and eventually you talk about what happens after 120. So maybe it's just that. I don't know.
So we should have left it maybe after
Nizik. Yeah, or, because it still belongs in Nizik. It still belongs in the halachas of dinim ominous. But yeah.
It's the end of it.
So this is the end. Remember, the three babas, according to one opinion we learned in Baba Kama, are considered one big masechta.
Right.
So the three babas talk about Dinim Ominous. So now that we're getting towards the end of Dinim Ominous, get Pashas, the 10th parak, is sort of an appendix. It talks about the Dinim of Shtaros. It's a more general topic. But yeah. Okay, so Yerusha. This is really for the first time in Arma Sefta. Also, we're going to be using Psukim heavily, which is why I brought a Chumash today, and we may have to make sure we have one around on a regular basis, because the dinim of Yerusha are the basics of them anyway, are in the Torah. What's that got to do with Yerusha?
You can always adjust and
portion. I don't know. I mean, Pesach Sheni is Nishtok and Kafal, and there's always a second chance. I don't know.
Right.
I guess there's a connection in a different way. Yeah, I guess the dinim of Yerusha came about because the Slavkot came with their argument.
Right.
Pesach Sheni also came
right.
about because the Yidden came with their argument. Lama Nigar. Okay. All right. The Pesukim go like this. The psukim that are going to be relevant for their so in the perek we're going to be discussing the general dinim of Yerusha. We're going to be discussing B'nai Slavkot. We're going to be discussing how they divided up Eretz Yisrael originally. We're going to have some interesting agata as we go along in there. Okay, so first let's review the psukim. Let's review the psukim briefly. Let's say like this. Well, B'nai Yisrael p'daber leimah. Speak to B'nai Yisrael as follows. Ish ki yomos, the person dies, or bein ein loy, he doesn't have any sons. V'havarta mas nachlosei lebitoy. Then you transfer over his nachla to his daughter. Why use the expression transfer over? We'll talk about in the Gemara in a few days. V'im ein loy bas, he doesn't have a daughter, and asata mas nachlosei le'echav, then you give his nachla to his brothers. V'im ein loy achim, if he doesn't have brothers, or asata mas nachlosei le'achei ovid, then you give his inheritance to his father's brothers, to his uncles. And if his father doesn't have any brothers either, then you give his inheritance to his closest relative. We'll talk about in the Gemara who we're referring to here by She'eroi. Mimishbachto, who's from his family, and that person will inherit it. And this shall be for Bnei Yisrael as a fixed mishpat. Those are the psukim. Not the only ones. You have also later on, at the very end of Chumash Bamidbar, you have the thing where Bnei Slavkot have to marry within their shevet so their nachla doesn't end up going to their husband and son's shevet and then be transferred out of that one. We'll talk about that in our parak as well. In Parshas Kiseitse you have the thing about giving a bechur a double portion. Those are the major places where the Torah talks about it. You have, by the way, interesting, you have two different expressions, you have two different words in Hebrew for inheritance. You have Yerusha and you have Nachla. Tackle what's the difference between them. I was looking up some things. So in Chassidus, in one of the Maimonides in Hemshech Chaim Beis, the Rebbe Rashab talks about the idea Yerusha, which literally means conquering. You have similar shorshim in Hebrew that means to conquer and dispossess and whatever. So that refers to the avodah of that refers to avodah sabirurim, the avodah of extracting the good from the not so good. That's Yerusha.
So Yerushalayim.
So that I don't think no Yerushalayim is not really directly related to that. Yerushalayim is called that to Yerushalayim. But for example, you have the expression in the pasuk "Vahirashtim Esa'oret." You have to kick out, you have to drive out the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael, and then conquer it, etc. So we see that the Lashon Yerusha means driving out, as opposed to Nachla. The Rebbe Rashab says over there refers to the avodah where you're oichel mitoch oichel, like going higher, going in vaseit, working within vaseit toiv itself. You're not fighting against the Ra, you're going higher and higher in toiv. That's Nachla. I've seen
that implied before Mashiach and after Mashiach.
Not necessarily before. No, even nowadays you have both kinds of. Even nowadays you have both. Yeah, but we still have. Sometimes we have Yerusha. Sometimes we have Nachla. Sometimes there's the avodah of Sur Miram. There's the avodah of Asay Turek. Each one is an avodah of its own. Okay. I call it a different.
I mean, to the land of Israel.
Yeah. Okay. But each one in its own way. There's other ideas behind it also. I saw a couple of essays by Jonathan Sacks where he explains that Nachla is Meloshon Nachal, like it just flows down, it comes to you naturally, kind of, as opposed to Yerusha, again, implies you have to work for it, you have to do something for it. Okay. All right. So let's start. Mishnah says, Yesh Neuchlin Manchilin. There are some relatives who inherit from their relatives, and also they can bequeath to those relatives. In other words, it goes both ways. For example, as we'll see in the Mishnah, for example, a father and son, for example, a son yarshins from his father, and Rahman al Zan, it can happen that a father can yarshin from his son. That's noichel u'manchilin. Yeah. Then you have cases where Reuven inherits from Shimon, but Shimon would not inherit from Reuven. Manchilin v'leimachilin, and you have the reverse, where Reuven bequeaths to Shimon, but Shimon would not bequeath to Reuven. Now, why we need to say that, if it's basically the same thing, the Gemara is going to talk about later on, after next week, we'll learn the Gemara is going to talk about what we're adding with those words, because it seems to be it's the same thing in reverse. Okay.
Going down generations or up?
No, it can be both. It can be up, it can be down, or it can be across. We saw in the Pesukim, right? It can be going down from father to children. It can be going up. It can be going up. It goes from the person to his uncle. Now, the Pesuk, by the way, did not mention, which is an important thing we're going to be talking about in the Gemara, that you have the father is actually in there also. A person dies childless. His father is actually ahead of his brother, ahead of his brothers in getting the Yerusha. We'll talk about that in the Gemara. Okay. And you have Loinoichel and Loinoichel, and then you have people who, even though they're relatives, neither one inherits from the other. One doesn't inherit from the other. One doesn't bequeath to the other. Okay. Examples of each of them. The following ones both inherit from each other and bequeath to each other. A father inheriting from his children. Or the children inheriting from the father. Va'achin minav, or brothers from the father's side, meaning not uncles, we mean your own brothers, but where you share the same father, even if you have different mothers. So all of those, noichel and manchil, and all of those can inherit from each other and they can bequeath to each other. There is, by the way, a bit of discussion among the Rishonim and among the Achronim. When we talk about the brothers inheriting, how do we look at it? Do we look at it that they themselves are considered direct heirs, just as much as children would be, so are brothers, except they're a couple of levels down in the sequence, but they're still direct heirs? Or maybe is it actually that, no, what's the mechanism by which they inherit is actually, if the guy dies without children, it should be his father who inherits from him, but because his father is dead, therefore it goes down to the other brothers. That kind of thing is called mishmush. That kind of thing where you go up generations and then start going down generations is called mishmush. We're going to talk about it, and then we're going to talk about it in the Gemara. We're going to talk about it in the first part of the parak. We're going to be discussing this concept of mishmush back and forth. And they talk about, the Haronim talk about a couple of different nafkaminas between these two possibilities, whether we say the brothers are direct heirs or whether we say it's mishmush. For example, the Ma'arav Shif talks about an interesting possibility. What happens, let's say, the father decides, you know what, one of my children is childless. If his own property, never mind what he's going to inherit from me, his own property, is not, he doesn't have any children to inherit it. I'm going to end up inheriting it from him if I outlive him. So he says, but you know what, let me go sell that option. You know, there is that possibility. I can sell that possibility to someone. The same way as we talk about, for example, a woman can sell her ksuba, where it's an iffy thing, she might collect it, she might not. Same thing over here. The father has the ability to sell that right, and his right to inherit his son. Now, what happens then? So let's say then that instead the father dies first. Do the other brothers inherit from this brother when eventually he dies? If we say the other brothers are direct heirs, sure, their father sold it. That doesn't affect them. But if we say it only happens through mishmush, that it has to go up to the father and then down to them, well, the father sold away his rights. So that's one nafkamina. I mean, there's a couple of that's the Ma'arav Shif. So then they wouldn't get anything from that. So the Ma'arav Shif says that one. There's a couple of others. There's a couple of others. Rabbi Akiva Eger and other Achronim talk about. According to that, then it would be so. According to that, it would be the one that the father sold it to. If we said that it goes through the father, because the father himself sold it away. That. No, we will talk about as we go throughout the parak. It is possible to a certain extent to override the dinim that the Torah says. But here we're talking about anyway. The father sold it before it ever came to inheritance. It's selling Gavash Leibala Olam. Fine, that's a different issue, but that doesn't necessarily. Yeah, I mean, it was done before the Yerusha ever came into play, so therefore it's not.
It's not the Yerusha, but let's say, can you sell the right after someone passes away?
Okay, so we're going to learn throughout the Perek. We're going to talk about when you're able to override, when you're not. Okay. Well, and no, if you yourself don't want it, fine. I mean, no, you can't. Nobody can force you to accept something, right?
You have children and brothers.
Okay, so we'll get to it, Robin. We'll get to it later in the panel. Okay. All right. So all those cases are neichel and manchil. Ha'ishet imoy. What about a man from his mother? Well, ishet ishto, you're a man and his wife, or bnei achoyos, or children of sisters. Children of sisters, the Rashbam talks about two possibilities. One is that it means that one is it's talking about that it means the son and his aunt. So in other words, if his aunt dies, then his mother inherits from her, and therefore he ends up inheriting from his aunt, that's bnei achoyos, meaning that this is his mother's sister, and he inherits from her. And then the Rashbam says another possibility that it also means that, for example, Reuven has a sister, then her children could end up inheriting from him, because if Reuven himself dies childless, then his sister Dinah will inherit from him, and eventually her children will inherit from her. The Rashbam prefers that second explanation only because of the structure of the Mishnah, but okay, the fact is both dinim are correct. Okay. Anyway, so all of those, neuchelin v'loy manchilin, all of those inherit, but they don't bequeath. So again, for example, let's say a man and his mother. So a man can inherit, a boy can inherit from his mother, but the reverse is not true. The mother won't inherit from her son. If the son dies childless, it'll go to his father, it'll go to his brothers, whatever, it will never go to his mother. So that's neuchelin v'loy
manchilin.
No. It's always going to go in the father's line. It's always going to go in the father's line. Nachlam mashmeshes v'halecha. This is a mishmush. It keeps on going back generation after generation, all the way back to the founder of the Shevet, if you have to. So again, you know, we'll talk about later on Kuptesvav. The Gemara is going to give us a Mishnah that we're going to have a Mishnah over there that goes through in detail generation by generation. But basically, the way it works is I'll give you a preview how it works. Leaving aside for the moment the question of inheriting from a person inheriting from his wife, because that's a complication which the Gemara is going to deal with. But basically, it goes like this: a person dies. His children inherit him, or if he doesn't have any children, then his grandchildren, to be exact, actually, first his son, then the descendants of his son, then his daughter, if he doesn't have any sons, then the descendants of his daughter. If none of the above, he doesn't have any descendants at all, then it goes back to his father. If his father is not alive, then it goes to his brothers. And if not to them, then to their children, et cetera. It keeps on going down like that. None of them, he was an only child, and you go back yet another generation, and you keep on repeating like that until you find some collateral branch, but it's always going to be in the male line. Okay. A woman inheriting, a woman with her sons, a wife with her husband, and brothers and brothers of the mother. All of those, manchilin v'lo neuchilin, all of those can bequeath but not inherit, which is those, that's the reverse of the previous case. In other words, if we're saying a son inherits from his mother, but the mother doesn't inherit from her son, then this is the same thing in reverse. In other words, again, why the Mishnah needs to mention it, the Gemara is going to talk about later on. I'm not hope you doubt it on a day in a few days. No. The mother doesn't inherit from her son. Yeah.
But the wife.
But the the wife doesn't inherit from her husband. That's the point. The husband can inherit from his wife. We're going to talk about in a couple of days in the Gemara what the basis for that is, whether it's Deraisa or Derabanan. There's a big argument about it. But a wife doesn't inherit from her husband. Yeah. Now, she is entitled to mezonos and other things like that, as we've brought back in Sulu. But not an actual Yerusha.
Husband is a
multimillionaire. Okay. Yeah. She gets mezonos, she gets modu amana, she gets whatever. But, yeah, okay. I mean, you can always do a matnas shrivmerah. That's going to be another one of the major topics we're going to discuss in our parak, is the whole concept of matnas shrivmerah, where a person can make requests while he's still alive to take effect with you.
Even if he's not
shrivmerah. Well, you can do a matnas bari also. The difference, I don't know, but a matnas bari, he can't change his mind. A matnas shrivmerah, if he recovers, he could. Manas bari means when he's still healthy. If he gives a gift, that's it. It's finished. It's irrevocable. Whereas a manas shimra, if he recovers, then he can revoke it. What about brothers who are only from the mother's side? They don't inherit from each other and they don't bequeath to each other. Because, as the Gemara is going to tell us, later on, we'll learn it tomorrow about the Shem, that the mother's side family is not called a family in halacha. Mishpacha is only the father, it's strictly the father's side. So therefore, you have brothers, for example, let's say, imagine, for example, you don't have to imagine. A woman has been married twice to two different husbands. She has children from both of them. They're only brothers from the mother's side. They don't inherit from each other. Finish. The Rashbam, by the way, points out that all of this only applies, only if Taka, the mother or the wife herself or whatever, is Taka not in the line of succession anyway. If, let's say, for example, we learned back in Yevamos, various cases where you can have a person marry his niece, for example, you could conceivably have that his wife would be in herself in the line of succession. That's different. Okay. Why does the Mishnah start by mentioning the case where the father inherits from his children? Shouldn't it mention first the case where the children inherit inherit from their father? Which there'd be two good reasons to do that. Number one, we shouldn't be starting with something which is a poronus that we should have that the son died childless. The Rashbam says, other Mepharshim also add, it's not usual that a son should die during his parents' lifetime. Rahman al-Khan. So why are we starting with that? As opposed to, okay, when a son inherits from his father dies, it's also a sad thing, but it's a normal thing. And Adarav, the Rashbam says, it's a bracha, that the father, when he dies, has somebody to take care of him, somebody to bury him, somebody to sit shiva for him, etc. He brings, for example, the Eibishter specifically promises Yaakov, and when he's going down to the giant, don't worry, Yosef will place his hands on your eyes to cover them. And he'll take care of your burial arrangements and all. So that's a bracha for a person. But the way that we have it in the Mishnah here, first the avos habanim is a korona. So that's one reason we shouldn't be starting with that.
Can you designate someone, though, even if you have children, to burial for all?
Yeah, I mean, the normal thing is that a son takes. The normal thing is that the children take care of this. But of course, yeah, it could happen that a person. Of course you could designate other people. Sure. Okay. And furthermore, there's a good reason why we should be starting with the son inheriting from his father, because that's the pasuk starts off ishki yomos ubein emoy. If a person dies and he doesn't have any children, implying, but if he had children, those children would be yarshining him. So in other words, that's the normal thing to start with. So why are we starting with the case of a father yarshining from his son, which it doesn't even say in the pasuk? And the answer is the Tana. So why did the Tana do it this way? The answer is I need to ask you. Midrasha Chabivale. There's a common thing that the Gemara uses in a few places. Taka, because the idea of a father inheriting from his son is something that we learn only from a Midrasha, therefore it's more precious to him. Therefore he wants to mention it first.
Because it can be lost?
Not maybe because it could be lost, but just because something that we learn from a drasha, something we have to hurry over to learn from a drasha, as opposed to having it as an open book in front of us, is something more precious to us.
But not more important.
And more important, therefore, in the sense that therefore he wanted to put it first. And therefore that kind of even overrides the thing of not starting with Purdahus. My drasha. So, okay, what is the drasha? What are we darshan to see this concept that a father would inherit from his son if the son died childless? Like this, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. So the last pasuk that we quoted over there said that unsatimus nachlosu l'sheiroi hakorev elov. You should give his inheritance to sheiroi, meaning his relative hakorev elov, who's close to him, and mishpachtoi from his family.
Well,
that's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara. But wait, so the word sheiroi zeha'a. The word sheiroi means his father.
We know
Shira is so the Rashbam points out, we have a couple of places, for example, we have, let's say, for example, the Torah says in last week's parasha, we had that Eras Imcha Lo Segale, don't have relations with your mother, because She'er Avicha, not your mother, rather, your sister, don't have relations with your aunt, but your father's sister, She'er Avicha, because she's your father's relative. So we see that She'er is associated with a father. Also, she'era. Also, in this week's parasha, ki the she'era yakarav elav le'imayul abim. She'era that closest to him, his mother and his father, etc. So we see again that she'era can mean parents. Okay,
Milan. Father,
yeah, yeah. Melamed sha'av kodim la'achem. This comes to teach us, therefore, that the father comes ahead of the brothers. So in other words, the Rashbam gives an example. Let's say if Reuven dies childless, rather than Shimon being the one to yarshin him, it would actually be Yaakov would be the first one to yarshin him.
Shimon
being his brother, like in the Torah, Reuven and Shimon. And then Yaakov is their father. So instead of Shimon yarshining him, Yaakov would be the one to yarshin him ahead of Shimon. If Yaakov is dead, then yes, Shimon yarshins him. And then again, you have the argument whether that's because of Mishmush or because Shimon is the direct heir. Okay. Now, the real question is, as the Gemara is going to get to later on, I mean, this pasuk, L'sheira, is at the very end of the whole description. So why are we saying that it comes ahead? That we're going to deal with later. That's what Aaron was saying before. Are you going to explain why the Sukkim are written out of order? So hopefully we'll get to it today. If not, then we'll get to it tomorrow. All right. Okay. Yoho Yehei Kodim Laben. So now you would think, maybe not. Maybe actually the father should be ahead of even the son of the mess. Meaning, in other words, so again, to continue the example involving the families of the Shvatim. So if Reuven dies and he does have children, let's say Reuven had four children, the Torah tells us, Chanoch, Palu, etc. So even if he has children, Chanoch and Palu and so forth, maybe Yaakov overrides them and gets the Yerusha ahead of them. So the Rashbam says, therefore, so what would it mean? I mean, so the son wouldn't inherit from his father? Chanoch would only inherit from Reuven only if Yaakov is already dead. But maybe if Yaakov is alive, he comes first. Tosfos discusses this a little bit and says a couple of possibilities. Not necessarily are we saying that first of all, the Gemara is going to discuss soon the brother. Maybe we can still argue maybe the brother would even come ahead. Maybe Shimon, in other words, in this example, would still come ahead of Yaakov, as the Gemara is going to continue discussing. But right now we're just dealing respectively with the father of the Nifter, namely Yaakov, versus the son, Chanoch. Versus the son, Chanoch. Tosfos also says, by the way, another possibility you could answer that again, the Rashbam's question, so what would you have? Would a son never Yaushin? Maybe, yeah, you would say a son only Yaushin in the case of a Ger, for example, because his biological father was not his father, the Halacha. Maybe with a born Jew, Taka, the father would always inherit and then go down through Mishmush to the brothers, etc. Yeah. Okay. So how do we know that not? The Talmud Lomar HaKorov. Therefore, the pasuk says not just the word she'erah, but it says hakorev, the close one, meaning hakorev, korev, koidim. The closer he is, the earlier he is in the order of Nachla. And in what sense is a son closer than a father? So in what sense is Chanoch closer to Reuven than Yaakov? Is that the Gemara is going to discuss in a few lines. So that's it. Therefore, so we see from the word hakarev, therefore, that the son Chanoch has to come ahead of the father Yaakov.
How do we know that?
That's what we're going to discuss. We're going to see that soon. But right now, let's start. First, we're going through the drushas. First, we're going through the braisa that gives us the drushas. Then we're going to start analyzing it. Okay. Next, you have to ask then, so okay, why are you saying that you're including the son then, and saying therefore that the son goes ahead of the brother, that Chanoch goes ahead of Shimon?
That's more understandable. Right. You're saying that the son comes before the father.
No,
but sure, he comes before the brother.
But on the other hand, the brother has a certain advantage, as we're going to see. Hold on. Okay. Let's talk a little bit ahead, and then we'll see it in the actual Gemara. If you think about it like this, a son can replace his father for certain dinim. For example, one of them is we talked a couple of times in this Masechta about the concept of Sdei Achuzah, the concept that if you have a field that you inherited from your ancestors and donated to the Beis Mikdash, that if you buy it back before Yovel, good, you bought it back, and if not, then Hekdesh keeps it and gives it to the Kohenim, etc., as we talked about. We've talked about in a previous paragraph that if the son of the one who sold it, so in this case, if Reuven was Makdashit, and his son Chanoch goes and buys it back from Hekdesh, it'll still stay in the family. If anybody else had done that, if Shimon bought it back from Hekdesh, or if Yaakov bought it back from Hekdesh, it wouldn't. But only the son, Chanoch buying it back, has the same effect as his father Reuven doing it. So in that sense, he's closer. On the other hand, a brother... No. But still, there's a certain curve over it. On the other hand, a brother has an advantage as far as yearbook. A brother is the one who does Yibum, no other relative does. A father has neither of the above. So therefore, there's more reason to say that either a father or a brother are considered closer relatives. So that's what we're asking. In other words, Mela, okay, we say the father is not the closest one when you have, when you're talking about a son or a brother. But now we're asking, why shouldn't we say then that the brother, why shouldn't we say that the brother comes, that the brother comes ahead? The brother has a certain advantage. That's an advantage.
And Yibum is...
Wait. So the answer is, Ma'adani is a ben. She can't come to other Yada or Sdei Achuzah. We would include the son and say that he goes ahead of anybody else, that he goes ahead of even the brother, and let alone the father, because he has the he replaces his father when it comes to Yud and when it comes to Sdei Achuzah. Sdei Achuzah we just talked about. Yud is, we learned back in Kedushin, that you buy an Amahavriya. The Torah wants that the master should do Yud, that he should take the money that was paid for buying her should become the Kesef Kedushin, and he should marry her. Either he can or his son can, he can decide instead that his son should marry her, and the same didn't apply. But it wouldn't apply to any other relative. It wouldn't apply, for example, that... Only an Amaria, but I'm saying only the master himself or the son. Nobody else. Nobody else would automatically be able to be either. Anybody else, you would have to do a regular tradition.
The
father first. But the point is that the son,
that's
the connection between the father and the son.
Above brother.
Exactly. That's
right.
The point.
We want the whole.
But that's the point. In other words, if Reuven buys an Amaria, either he can do Yiyud with her, or his son, Chanoch, can do Yiyud with her. Nobody else.
Either way.
So, but on the other hand, Yaakov can't and Shimon can't. That's the advantage. That's one of the advantages of the son over anybody else. And for Sdei Achuzah, again, that only if the son buys it back from Hekdesh, nobody else. Perchus actually points out there's a third one also. You also have, as far as the din of Eved Ivri. Namely, we also learned in Kedushin that if Reuven buys an Eved Ivri and then dies, then Chanoch will take over and continue and continue having to work for him. As opposed to if he doesn't have any children, and his brother or his father or daughter or whoever inherits him, then they don't. It's only strictly a son.
So that's two cases.
So we have three, actually. Okay, you could argue maybe. Yeah, you could argue maybe that Yud and Eved Ivri is basically two sides of one coin. They both have to do with Avdus, but whatever. The point is, you still have two.
And is that why Tosfos doesn't mention it?
Tosfos doesn't say. He just says that he could have mentioned that. Tosfos doesn't elaborate, but yeah, maybe that's why.
Because they get into this thing why we have two.
That doesn't matter either way.
So then we have a third.
Yeah, okay, but still. So it's still a majority either way. Yeah, it's still a majority.
No, but they cancel. At one point, they have the Halamim. They cancel one out because of the Yibum. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, okay, let's look at that. Let's see.
But I'm just thinking the third one would help.
All right. Okay, so the question is, okay, but on the other hand, maybe you should be married with a brother. He has an advantage over anybody else. He's the one who does Yibum. He's the one who stands in place of his brother for Yibum.
Actually, speak up.
It doesn't matter frequency. Sdei Achuzah isn't necessarily that frequent either. Amari isn't not frequency. It's the fact is, we see that he replaces his brother as far as Yibum. Okay, the Gemara answers back, so what? Kulum Yeshu Yibum Elam Makam Shein. So what? The whole point is, you only have Yibum when there's no son. In other words, the fact that he can do Yibum is only when there's no son available. So, Hob Makam Sheyesh Ben Ein Yibum. So if there is a son to begin with, then there's no Yibum, yeah. So therefore, in that sense, in other words, then they're at least equal. Therefore, they're at least equal, and actually, in a certain sense, even more, because the son is actually he represents his father's name. When there's no son, then you need Yibum lahakim la'achiv shem. His name fell down, and now it has to be reestablished. So the son, in that sense, precedes that, right? Yeah.
What?
No, but the brother is there was the guy is worried that his name is going to be erased if he doesn't do Yibum, and therefore he does Yibum in order to reestablish it. A son is there was never any Havam in his name.
He said, "What about the daughter?"
Oh well, the daughter we're going to talk about soon. Yeah, if there's a daughter, you don't do Yibum either. But yeah.
That argument out of the water.
But the fact of the matter is, we are saying that we know that the whether there's a son or a daughter, they come ahead of anybody else. If there's a son, they go come ahead of anybody else. No son, then goes to the daughter.
Is Benzion saying that the daughter comes also before the?
Yeah. Well, that is how it is. That's how the pasuk says it. Yeah. Again, the Gemara is going to end up saying that we're only taking the word l'she'eroi, we're only taking this pasuk with l'she'eroi, pasuk yud'alef, and moving it out of place to put the father ahead of everybody else. All the other pesukim we are keeping in order. The Gemara is asking why we shouldn't, and the Rashbam takes it at face value. If we're saying we can already rearrange one pasuk, maybe we can rearrange others. A number of other Rishonim say, no, the Gemara never had a hava, you should rearrange the pesukim to that extent. The Gemara is either just doing it as part of the argument in order to establish the fact, or just that fine, we shouldn't, fine, maybe we shouldn't say that we rearrange the pesukim. But why are we saying that, why are we saying the father goes ahead, we said the father goes after the brothers or whatever, but why are we saying that the first is the son, then it's the brothers, maybe the son and the brothers should be on an equal level? Okay, so the Gemara says, "Time of Ikahai Pircha." Okay, so what are you saying? Because you're able to slug up the advantage of the brother, because he only does Yibum, there's no son in the first place. Other than that, you would have thought that maybe Taka, brother, has an advantage, and maybe goes ahead of the son, or ahead of the father, as the case may be. Why? Why should you even assume that? Typically, Dehochatati Vahochachoda. Don't you have enough of a reason to say that the son goes ahead because he has two advantages, Yud and Shdei Achuzah, and the brother only has one, Yibum? So never mind the question when Yibum happens, when it doesn't. Two against one, majority rule. Mm-hmm. The answer is Shdei Achuzah. So that's what you were saying, Aaron. Okay. Shdei Achuzah, go for my high time of just the Chaim Leilatana. Because after all, Shdei Achuzah itself, what the Gemara is saying is the answer is that how do we know Shdei Achuzah itself? You only know it from the same kind of drasha. You only know it from the same, by Shdei Achuzah, after all, the Pasuk only says if he buys it back from Hekdesh, it doesn't say anything about his children buying it back. And it doesn't say that's only the son and not the brother or whatever. How do we know that Taka only applies to the son? Same reason, because the Tana learns it out from the same kind of argument. Because there's only Yibum when there's no son, but when there's a son and there's no Yibum. In other words, Shdei Achuzah itself, it comes from the same argument, meaning you don't really have two different cases, Yibum and Shdei Achuzah, where we see a son has an advantage over a brother. You really only have one independent one, Yibum, where the Pasuk clearly says that a father and a son have equal status. Anything else we only learn by the same argument using Yud.
Yeah.
So in that case, fine, take out Shdei Achuzah then, and really all you have left is
right.
Yud. So okay,
that's
what
you have to say that Tosfos is
right. So I guess then the answer would be like I was saying, that's because Eved Ivri and Amar Ivri are basically two parts of the same din, and therefore you would say that therefore you would say it doesn't really count as a separate argument. So therefore, in other words, if it weren't for so on that basis, really, you only have one against one. You have Yud versus the lack of Yibum, which, okay, by the way, also Shdei Achuzah can be learned in the same way. So you really only have one against one. You need the fact that Yibum itself only takes place when there's no son to say, therefore, the brother's claim to any being ahead in the line because of Yibum is very weak, because of when there's a son, then Yibum doesn't come into play anyway. Fine. Now let's try another possibility, though. Fine. So we established so far that so far we've established then that the order is you have the person's son, then if he doesn't have sons, then his father, and if he doesn't have a father, then his brothers. That's the order. Now let's consider Ema She'era Zeha'av. How about another possibility? Maybe fine. Okay. Let's say the word She'era means the father, like we said before. But Melamed She'av Kodem Labas. Maybe you could use it to argue that the father comes ahead of a daughter. In other words, what did the father
could mean?
No, she'era means the father, but in other words, it means like this. Fine, we establish the father doesn't go ahead of the son because the son has an advantage because of Yud and Shdei Achuzah and whatever. And he doesn't go ahead of the brother because the brother does have an advantage as far as Yibum. The father has none of the above. But a daughter doesn't do Yibum. A daughter doesn't have the same status as her father as far as Yud. She can't do Yud anyway. It's an Amar Ivri. So therefore, if you're going to argue like that, maybe say that the father comes ahead of the daughter. So maybe the order should be the son, no son, then the father, no father, then the daughter, and then the brothers. Maybe it should be in that order. And you would say, Yochel Yakim Lebein, and then you would say that maybe you would think the father even goes ahead of the son, Tamabayim HaKorev, Korev, 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 then we would use the word HaKorev to mean the closest one goes first. So fine, we would establish that a son is closer than a father because of Yiv and Steachuzah. We establish a brother is closer than a father because of Yiv. A daughter is none of the above, so maybe Taka, the father, should go ahead of her. The answer is given to the inin yibum benu bas kiadorin, because when it comes to yibum, a son and daughter are equal. If the person who died has sons or daughters, if he has any living descendants that are Jews, then that are not from a goiter or shikha, then there's no yibum. Then there's no yibum. So by the same logic, therefore, the son and daughter are also considered the same as far as nachla. If a person has, if Reuven had a son, or he had a daughter, it doesn't matter. Or even if his son and daughter are both dead, but he has children from his son, he has children from his daughter, whatever it is, descendants from his son, descendants from his daughter, whatever, then there's no yibum. Yibum is only if he has no living descendants at all. So therefore, in that sense, a daughter, it's true a daughter doesn't have the advantage over the father as far as Steachuza or as far as Yehud. But nevertheless, as far as Yibum, she's still considered on an equal level with the... So where do we learn that? The Rashbam says, because when the Pasuk says, Bein Einloi, that he has no children, Einloi, we learned in Yevamos, can also be darshan as Ayin Olov. Check into it, find out if he has any living descendants. And therefore we said, for example, it applies even, he has children, he has descendants who are Mamzerim, he has whatever, as long as not descendants from a Goethe or a Shivcha, which are not considered as children at all, Then they pass her his wife from Yibum.
So we say Ben means also.
So Ben there means a daughter as well, yeah.
From where?
From that. So from that. So actually Tosfos points out the word I and all of is used over there to say even a mamzer or whatever. So Tosfos starts by saying, okay, but since it means descendants, then fine, it could mean a mamzer, it could mean a daughter, so therefore it means both. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow with the discussion.